Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont with hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West. Each week, a new topic specific to building or renovating in the Green Mountains and your phone calls. Brought to you by RK Miles, a third-generation family-owned business, proud to be your local buildings material supplier. Find a location near you at rkmiles.com. By Poly Construction, for over 30 years known for anything construction, big or small jobs. One call does it all. POLLIConstruction.com. Ken Libby of the Stowe Area Realty Group at Keller Williams Stowe, your trusted advisor at 802-793-2002. Curtis Lumber, with two locations in Vermont, Williston and Burlington. Request a quote for your next project online at curtislumber.com. By Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. By Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpainting.com. By Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems, for all things basementy, northernnefoundations.com. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Good afternoon, listeners. I'm Jim Bradley, and I'm here with my friend and colleague.
How's it going, everybody?
Chris West, and hope everyone's having a great day. It's beautiful out there. Sun is shining.
Okay, wait a second. We're going to go there right away. So I'm a member of the Cloud Appreciation Society, which was set up in the 1990s to go against the concept that sunny days are, by definition, good. All days are good. Try to live in a place that never rains. They call them deserts. That's just a shtick of mine.
So it is an enjoyable day out there. With that, you know, this week, as the temperatures are getting colder and people are noticing drafts, and they're, as we've talked about in the last couple of weeks, firing up their heating systems and then noticing as they do, so there's some areas of comfort in their house that they need to address, or yeah, condensation, or where just the outdoors is getting indoors, including the rodents are getting indoors. So
they're looking for their winter house too.
Exactly. So they're going to, you know, seal these things up. And so the calls are starting to come in for home performance assessors or energy auditors to come out and take a look. And I'm sure the hardware stores and your local purveyors of weather stripping and caulking and foam are getting a lot of calls. And what they're doing is they're selling products to help people improve their homes. But with that, you know, the audits that we continue to do, and for the last 17 years plus that I've done these, it's not always a comfortable situation, because as you're doing this home performance assessment, you're finding not the good things normally with the house, but the bad things. It reminds me of a quote from Steve Buscemi from the movie Armageddon. He said, you know, we're sitting on 4 million pounds of fuel, one new nuclear weapon, and a thing that has 270,000 moving parts built by the lowest bidder. Makes you feel good, doesn't it? And so when you're sitting across the table from a homeowner who has had known issues with their house, but they don't know how extensive it is. In fact, in doing a home performance assessment recently, Chris and I found the whole house in the attic areas and everything else had historic mold and known issues within the house, that the only way to address it is really to do a very comprehensive retrofit and possibly
destroy the house and
raise it and start again. And that's just a hard thing to put together. So in building, you need to do it effectively. The building materials, we said this before, have completely changed from what they were, you know, 100 plus years ago as far as the durability is concerned. Now, granted, we're building better systems, but we're not always giving proper respect to vapor drive and how that affects these engineered products. And if we don't give proper deference and consideration there, they're not going to care. They're going to rot.
That's right.
And it's going to affect the health and safety of the occupants. It's going to affect your investment. You're going to have to pay for things again. And so with that, in today's show, what we're going to talk about is why should you have a home performance assessment done or an energy audit, and why that is so valuable in how you move forward with your project. Even if you're doing a DIY, do-it-yourself project, it's going to give you that opportunity to have better education, better understanding how to do things, instead of just watching that nice little commercial about the Pink Panther and why this fluffy stuff is great.
Which it isn't.
It isn't. It can cause a lot of issues if you do it wrong. So we're not just about selling units. We're trying to make sure your assembly as a house is whole and sound, is going to last and be comfortable.
I think I'd be much more into selling units if I was getting a cut, but we don't get cuts.
But before we begin,
Chris. So I just wanted to bring up a couple of bits of information before we dive into the show. First of all, we've been getting emails from people. Thank you very much.
Definitely.
I have one email here from Betsy. Betsy was asking about whether she could get an energy audit, and we'll be back in touch about that. But she'd also like us to comment about plastic paneling on walls, ceiling, and floors, along with exterior vinyl, and how that might create a problem, because she has mold. And yes, so when we're talking about building materials, one of the things we need to be aware of is whether or not that building material has a vapor open profile, right? And by vapor open, it means that gaseous water can move through it or not.
Yes.
And anything that's vinyl, anything that's plastic has no ability to move vapor. So if you're going to put vinyl paneling.
Well, it does, but usually vertically.
After it condenses, it'll roll down the surface. If you're going to use a vinyl paneling, we've even had this discussion with homeowners. Once a wall has been designed to be a vapor open wall, saying do not use low permeability paint. Do not put vinyl wallpaper on your walls, because
sure,
you're doing exactly what it seems like Betsy is experiencing, which is you have a vapor closed outside, you have a vapor closed inside, you don't have a very well air sealed assembly, so air is moving moisture into that wall, and that, and it doesn't have a place to dry. And when you have, what are the three things that allow mold to exist? A temperature between 40 mm-hmm. degrees and 90 yep. degrees, which is a great, which is what we create to live in.
Sure.
A food source, which we can't change. We're not building our houses out of things that aren't food.
And that food source is, it's Chris, you said your building product.
Your building product, your wood. And the last one, which is the only one we can really control, is the moisture. And in that particular situation, if you have a vapor closed outside and a vapor closed inside, you are creating the perfect place for mold to grow. So I wanted to say, yes, Betsy, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Vinyl siding inside, outside of a building, and vinyl paneling inside of a building, floors, ceilings, walls, whatever, is a bad idea. And if you can do it, you can have vinyl siding inside of your house or vinyl paneling, but then you have to design around that to make sure that the wall is breathing and able to dry out in other directions. It's okay to have a wall that dries only in one direction,
sure,
although we try to make sure that the building materials allow to dry in both.
Yeah.
But if you but what you're describing is what we call a vapor sandwich.
Hey, if you want a good sandwich, go to Martone's in Essex. You don't want that on the walls of your house or the floor system.
Or the Firebird. I mean, we're not going to get all specific. I wouldn't say McDonald's, but that's up to the individual. I also wanted just to mention our YouTube channel. YouTube.com/C/HouseCallsVermont. We have snippets from energy audits that we've done. So you can walk through an energy audit with us. As a matter of fact, today's a great show for that, because we'll be talking more about that. And if you just want to see what we've discovered in the audits that we've had, and I just want to say we've gotten permission from all the homeowners who,
yes,
who were, you know, producing these videos to use them for that. So there's no problem there. But you're able to follow us doing the process. And that process is, we have a standard way of doing an energy audit. We have been told that our audits are much more extensive than others. And I actually got a call from a colleague of mine saying he was hired to do the retrofits that we recommended on a house, and that our audit report was I think the word he used, a textbook, was the term that he used. So it was way more information than even he as an energy auditor puts into an audit. So we're kind of nuts that way. We kind of go overboard. We want to make sure that the client has all the information they need. Also, we got one of our indoor air quality study units back, the IQ Airs, and I was able to download that information and turn that into a report, and it was very telling.
Definitely.
We were able to see, depending on where that unit was, whether or not adding indoor air quality measures, whether that would be increased ventilation or something like that, for individual rooms in an existing house. Now, putting a HRV or an ERV, heat recovery ventilation, or enthalpy / energy heat recovery systems are very good to do and easy to do when you're building a brand new house, because you can create the chase waste and all that. But doing it in an existing house is a real pain.
When it's a whole house. Now,
when it's a whole house.
Source,
yeah.
You can do that, because I actually have two of those in my house, and I did it for that very reason, to show that you can do you can place one of these units in your house to make sure your indoor quality is where it needs to be. So it is possible. It's just you have to, once again, have this assessed. Make sure.
We work from data. Don't work from a guess. I described this the other day, a couple of weeks ago. I had a colleague of mine contact me, not a person related to the building industry, and he said, yeah, we're having condensation on our windows, and we called a company to come in and take a look, and they said, oh, what you need is more ventilation. And although I said to him, it may be that you have bad indoor air quality and you need more ventilation, but the reason you're getting condensation on your windows has nothing to do with ventilation, unless your relative humidity is very high.
Sure.
And more likely, it's just that the window is just not a good enough window, and it's going to have a space, usually the bottom inch or two of the window, where that the actual R value of the window creates a dew point, and then you get condensation. And you cannot get your room dry enough. To the point.
Not comfortably dry enough.
Right. You're going to live in 15% relative humidity? You'd be miserable. You'd have itchy skin and runny noses and bloody noses.
Yeah.
And all kinds of issues. So, sometimes you're going to get advice that's not the right advice for the presenting problem. And I just want to point that out. That's what we're here for. We're here for you to call up and ask those questions. The number here is 802-244-1777. We're about to come up on our first break. But before we do that, let's just talk a little more about what we're going to be talking about today.
Well, certainly. So, you know, you're going to be wanting to address some of these issues that you're noticing once again this time of year. You get a little bit colder, you get more of this condensation, you want to basically make sure you're spending less energy, because especially when prices are going up, you
propane,
see
historic highs almost.
And natural gas is going to be the same.
Yep.
So you're going to say, okay, how can I save money in these areas? Certainly, you could go down and buy a bunch of products and try to install them appropriately. But if you don't understand your house as a system and how it's operating, you could make things potentially worse and not any better than what it was before. So what you want to do is you want to make sure that you're having a qualified individual assess the house and to know how it's performing and give you a laundry list of items. And they're, as the customer asked us this morning, a matter of precedence of priorities. How should I address these things?
Yep.
And then over time, not necessarily all in one season, but over time, what's the first item that you need to address? Because what if you tried to address other issues that ended up causing other opportunities to be missed or other problems to come up. So having that done by a qualified individual, whether it's an individual from Efficiency Vermont's EEN network, the Efficiency Excellent Network, if one of those contractors who are trained in this, or Vermont Gas has auditors that can also do this for you, and also the Vermont Weatherization Assistance Programs.
If you're a working class person and you may have income that's at a level that allows for you to apply to one of the weather resistance programs. There are five throughout the state, and those are specifically programs where the audit and the work is done free of charge to you.
Because even if you're doing the work yourself, having this done allows you by somebody who's part of, let's say, the EEN network with Efficiency Vermont, allows you to tap into rebate monies also, so after the work has been verified. So it just really makes a lot of sense and saves you dollars at the same time. We are coming up on that break right now, but with that, please give us a call with any of the weatherization questions or building questions, building science questions you may have, renovation questions at 802-244-1777, and we'll be back after the break.
Christmas Eve Then and Now by Wythe Windows. Christmas Eve Then.
And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap.
Tighten up that kerchief. It's going to be a cold one.
It's that nasty draft from the window that's to blame.
Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash.
Hurry, I think I see something.
It's stuck.
And Christmas Eve Now.
Look, it's Santa. What a clear, unobstructed view we get through our Wythe windows. Quick, tilt it open.
Hey, Santa, it's Jim.
Those are some good-looking Wythe tilt-and-turn windows.
I know. 8 locking points keep them air and watertight, and they're made in New Jersey.
That's my next stop. I have a new guitar for the boss.
I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight.
Wythe windows for all, for a house cozy and tight.
Wythe windows, high-performance passive house windows and doors. Online at WYTHEWindows.com.
Welcome back. This is House Calls Vermont, and I'm Jim Bradley.
And I'm Chris West.
There we go. And with that, we're talking about why should I have a home performance assessment or energy audit performed on my home?
And what should I expect to happen once I make that agreement?
Exactly. And, you know, when people call us up, they're usually saying, hey, it is cold outside. I want to save money on my energy bills. How do you make my house more efficient? I say, well, if you've called just for that answer, I'm probably not the best person to talk to, you know, because what we're going to do first and foremost, and I developed this many, many years ago, is I'm going to look at the house as a system and go first in giving respect to health and safety measures to make sure that if I did changes or made changes to the house, am I going to create other issues to the building occupants? I'm also going to look at durability. And in any of these changes that you're going to make or any presenting problems that are found during the home performance assessment have to be addressed so that the structure lasts and can be maintained well. Because if you're making further investment into your structure, you want to make sure it's not going to be wasted money. So if you get those first two components right, the first two legs of the triangle, if you will, the health and safety component and then the structural durability, you're going to get energy efficiency along for the ride in the back seat because I can't help but be there. And so, you know, when we're actually going through fresh off of one today, Chris, a home performance assessment, you know, what are we usually going through with the customer and how does this process usually start?
So it starts with the initial contact. We have a client who contacts us one way or the other. And although Jim said sometimes he'll say maybe I'm not the best person for that particular audit because they're only looking for energy efficiency, we often end up getting there and noticing things that they didn't notice about the health and safety, about the durability of their structure. So even when someone calls up and says, yeah, maybe I just want to save some money, it's almost always also.
Or they say, I know exactly what I need.
Right.
And then, okay, that might be true, but then there's so many aha moments like, oh, now I understand. When the client realizes that they didn't know exactly what they needed and they could have made errors.
There's a reason why we use experts for things. I'm not going to diagnose my own health things. I mean, I may start by saying, oh, I have symptoms, let me go to the doctor, but then I go to the doctor. Buildings are, first of all, once again, the most expensive thing that most people are ever going to buy is a house. And it's also one of the things that people are most cavalier about when they start doing things to it. Oh, I've seen that. I know what to do. And the answer is you probably don't. And that's not a put down on anyone. I know builders who don't, right? I know people who work professionally in the industry who call us and ask us for advice because they built something and now they're realizing something's not working right. And they're like, sure. Oh, what did I miss? What is outside of my purview? When Jim and I walk into a house, whether we're visiting someone for an evening meal or we're there for an energy audit, we can't help but point out what we see is wrong with their house.
Probably why we don't get the return.
Right. We're always wondering why we're not being invited back. No, that's not true. So what people should expect is that we show up at the appointed time within. Now, I'm a big fan of my New York style. Anything that's 15 minutes before, 15 minutes after is on time. Once you're past that, you're early or late. So we meet with the client and we say hi and we get introduced to, you know, the people and the animals in the house. And then we start by doing just a chat, you know, hi, we're here. It's going to take, you know, 2 or 3 hours depending on the shape and size and the complexity of the building. And then we're going to do a quick walkthrough. The first walkthrough
is usually outside.
Outside, right. Certainly. We start outside because what we see outside is going to give us an idea of what's going on with the durability. If we see cupping on the shingles on a roof, we know that that roof is in having some issues. And then we can ask, so how old is that roof? Oh, I had that roof put on 5 years ago. Well, it shouldn't be in this condition if you put it on 5 years sure. ago. Is it this? Is it that? And then we have kind of a list of questions that pop into our head. We look around to see if the siding is within, you know, too close to the ground, because as rain hits the ground, it splashes back on the wood part of the assembly, and that causes the once again, the controlling of the moisture is one of the ways we control durability issues. We look at windowsills. We look at windows. We look at chimneys. We look at penetrations. Anytime the envelope is got penetrations, we're looking at that. We look at changes in geometry.
Oh, definitely.
You know, because that's a major point. When builders are building complex geometries like a Victorian, which is our most favorite visual but our least favorite for building science, they were not even thinking about how do I make sure that this is air sealed. Then you've got a tower and a bump out and a this and a that. And all of those changes in geometry are massing of lumber, and they're also make it hard to air seal. So we love interesting architecture. It's good for our brains. It's interesting. But we also have to be aware that if you're going to have changes in geometry, that's another place that we can see issues.
And we're also looking at, when we look at the structure or the shell of the building, we're looking to see, okay, if we're making changes inside, are we going to make things worse by tightening up the home? Because if you already have bulk water moisture getting in, or you have rodent infiltration or things like that, and you tighten up the home, you're going to fundamentally change how the house is performing, and you can create a mold factory. So, and also, why would you want to spend money on interior measures? Like, let's say you have a leaky attic, and you're trying to insulate it more. You insulate it more, but you got a leaky roof. Then that new insulation gets really saturated, and it shifts from being an insulator to a conductor, and it promotes rot. So you want to make sure is the outside of that building sound, secure, safe, and ready to be modified to be improved.
I remember very clearly, actually, the house that we were doing an audit on this morning reminded us of another house
yes.
that we had done that's also in the same neighborhood, exact same age.
Yes.
And when we got up onto the roof, the client was saying, oh, I have sheetrock falling on my bed.
Yeah.
And we went up onto the roof, and literally there was a hole in the roof. The roof had the sheathing had rotted. It was like looking at a tent, right? From one rafter to another, there yeah. was a divot, and that was what was happening. So we were able to quickly discern that we don't often have to get onto roofs,
sure.
but if you're on one of these contemporary houses with 5 or 6 different roof lines, you can't see everything. So sometimes we have to get up on a roof if we can't see it from the ground. So the first thing we do is the external walk around. The external walk around tells us a lot of things. It tells us what kind of fuel you have. It tells us how many bath fans you have,
whether
what type of basement you have.
Yeah.
Today it was a slab on grade, but it's often not. It tells us what the construction was that put it together. We can tell, like one of the things Jim saw today right off the bat, the siding was cupping, and he was like, oh, it seems like they didn't prime the back of this siding before they put it up. And the owner was like, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what they did.
But it was cupping to such an extreme that some of these shiplap or tongue and groove boards were opened up and allowing water to shoot right into that structure. And so that's going to cause rot.
Right, because now when rain comes down, the outside of the building, you know, rain hits the building and then is shed down. That is now going to let bulk water, rainwater, get behind that siding between the sheathing, which is probably plywood, and the tar paper, which we were told is there. And we were also told by the owner, once we got done with the outside walk around, that he had had the wall open a number of places, and it was classic late 1970s construction.
80s, 90s, yeah.
Yeah, 2x6 wall with a sheet of plastic on the inside, a sheet of plywood on the outside, some tar paper and siding on the outside, and then sheetrock on the inside. This is not, and it was 2x6. So it was just after the code was changed. changed mm-hmm. in order to increase the R value of the wall insulation. But this is before we cared about how tight a house was, and this is before we understood that the stud heat loss, the thermal bridging that studs cause in a wall.
Exactly. And so, you know, with that, what we did as well, and what we do with all of our clients and any energy auditor would do, is ask also what are their concerns. You know, granted, you had us out there to save money or another issue or ice dams that they know happen historically. You know, how are we going to solve that? And then, but we also, you know, want to know, are there any other presenting issues inside the house that they're concerned about?
What have you noticed?
Exactly.
Where are you cold? Have you noticed separating sheetrock tape? Have you noticed mold? Have you noticed, you know, that you are the best diagnostic tool in the toolbox until we show up.
Well,
right?
Like the client today said, you know, when I asked them, okay, if you heat with wood, what do you normally keep your indoor temperature at? And, you know, or where does it fall?
That was a great answer.
It was.
So the important thing on this is he's heating with point source heaters. He's got a wood stove and he's got a Rinnai, and up in one bathroom he has a very small electric heater. And originally the whole house was electric. But if you have point source heating, that means that you're going to have very warm areas. And then you're going to have what's called thermosiphoning. Thermosiphoning is the process where warm things move from warm to cold. So hot air, as we've discussed before, rises. So he's got a wood stove and a Rinnai on the first floor, and that causes hot air, and that hot air rises. But when asked, the client said, well, it depends on where you are in the house. Upstairs in the back corner, it's 40 degrees, and downstairs it's 90. It's like, yes, we understand.
And this is historic. I mean, this is way houses have been built for generations, and even the old Viking mound houses, they would have the big central fire, and you were warm right there, but then you were very cold anywhere else in the structure. And so getting to know that, you know, we're understanding how the client sees the house performing, and so we can start to craft or address the problems. And so we looked at, in this same house, once again, it just provided so many opportunities, we started looking at the walls and we started seeing the effect of ghosting. And ghosting is a term that was developed because basically your framing members or cold areas on the exterior wall surfaces will allow the indoor moisture-laden air to condense because it's warm air hitting a cold surface like it does on your windows, but it can happen on your walls. And then any other extra dust or soot inside the airstream will stick to it and stain it, and then it'll cause a term that we call ghosting. And you can actually sometimes count the number of ceiling joists or wall framing studs.
Yeah.
And so you'll see that, and people say, well, it's time to paint. Well, painting doesn't solve the problem. It masks the problem.
Right. So ghosting, just to be really clear, is if you have a wall and you're looking at the wall and you have these kind of dark stripes going up your wall or on your ceiling
at 16 to 24 inch intervals.
so that is a thermal bridging thing, right? And you'll see it more. I remember we were in one house where the ghosting was really extreme. We're like, well, you don't heat with wood. Where's all the soot coming from that's mm-hmm. causing the dust in the air that's collecting or sticking to the moisture that has condensed on the area near the stud? Well, she was burning candles like crazy.
Yeah.
And so there's a source for the soot. And painting is not going to solve it because you're not addressing the underlying problem. The underlying problem is that the R value of a stud is 1 per inch. So if you have a 3 inch, 3.5 inch stud, that's an R3, but your wall cavity insulation is an R13. And that creates a place on the sheetrock that is below the dew point. Water condenses there. The dust attaches to the water. The water evaporates, but the dust stays.
Exactly.
And that's what ghosting is.
And so as we move to the indoors of the house with the client, we are also going to start, as we walk around the entirety of the house, getting a feel of the geometry, looking for other known issues or presenting problems like, hey, let's say there's missing window trim like we saw today and voids going to close to the outdoors. We know that's going to be a leaky area. We also look for the condition of other heating appliances, if there's backdraft evidence or if there's a basement, is there moisture in the basement. We're also going to be making sure we're locking the windows.
Right, as we're walking around. close the windows.
Are you afraid of somebody getting in? No, we're basically
not during the audit.
No, when you're locking your windows, you're basically making the weather stripping. If it has the opportunity to seal, it will. So locks aren't just for security; it's also to make the different surfaces or sashes of the window sealed to the weather stripping, so you get a tighter assembly
for the blower door test, which is one of the steps a little further down. So we're walking through. We're saying, what are your concerns? Where are you cold? What are your other durability concerns? Have you had mold? Have you seen moisture? Is it cold here? And then we move on towards the next step. And the next step is?
We're going to be heating, basically the heating systems. We want to make sure. Now, first and foremost, we've already qualified the fact that if you're heating with wood, that fire has been extinguished and there are no active coals inside that system. Because when you start to depressurize the house, you can have a wonderful smoke event
We're depressurizing the house. We put a fan in the door and we're sucking air out. Now, we've had a number of people say, are you going to turn the fan on, or are we all going to get sucked out the door?
Only small dogs.
Right. So we keep this. No. The actual amount of air that's moving is not enough to create a serious, dangerous area near the front of the fan.
Where it Dorothy is, and Auntie, would be.
Auntie M. Auntie M. Auntie M. Auntie M. Is it an aunt or an aunt? That's a regionalism, right? I always said aunt. I'm an East Coaster. So in preparation for the blower door test, we need to make sure that we're turning our boilers off, our furnaces off, that the fireplaces or pellet stoves or wood stoves have been turned off for hours before then.
Anything that a blower door would cause a backdrafting event, because that's really hard to explain away after it happens. One, it's not really safe, but two, if you got to evacuate smoke afterwards, not a great discussion topic.
Right. And there have been, we're human beings. I remember not so long ago we were in a house and we started the blower door test and we hadn't made sure that the flue on the fireplace was closed, and it kind of blew ashes into the living room. And we're like, okay, can we borrow your vacuum cleaner?
Exactly. But we're also going to look for other obvious issues as we're doing this walk around. Like, are there any open junction boxes that we see in the attic?
Yeah.
Or conductors like pieces of Romex or knob and tube that are bare and exposed and still functional and a safety hazard. We find these things often.
Or if a house is from an age where we might expect that the attic or walls might have vermiculite in them,
definitely,
we want to check that before we turn the blower door on. So anything older than 1976, we have to check to make sure that we don't accidentally introduce asbestos into the airstream and contaminate the house, because that vermiculite often had asbestos in it.
And what Chris and I have taken to doing, and I recommend this for all people who do this type of work, is before you turn on that blower door, don't look at the attic afterwards or the basement. Look at it before, because you'll see key indicators. Sometimes in basement, you'll find the vermiculite insulation that has migrated all the way down from the attic through the balloon frame construction of the wall system and then appeared in the basement. So you want to make sure you're looking at these things. And then if you find vermiculite, you're not supposed to do a normal depressurization test with a blower door, because you can contaminate the whole house. But getting your head up into the attic as well, like we did today, finding active mold that the owner thought was historic and not still active, and also wet sheathing that was there, knowing that there was a known roof leak issue, not just a condensation issue, and it helps guide the process of the whole audit and work scope as you move through.
And before we move on, the whole talk about the blower door test and vermiculite bears a little bit more explanation. So there are protocols in place that some people follow that if you find vermiculite, you don't do a blower door test, and that's us. We say we don't depressurize and we don't pressurize a house with vermiculite in it, because the chances are just too great that we're going to introduce airborne asbestos into the house. There are people in the state and throughout the country who have protocols that say if you find a house that has vermiculite, you should not depressurize, but you can pressurize. What's the problem with that, Jim? Why is that a bad idea?
So a lot of the older homes, like the old historic Victorian that Chris was mentioning, they didn't really give respect to attic ventilation. And so they had closed soffits, no ridge vent, no gable vents. And so when you're pressurizing the house, especially balloon frame construction, that air is going to go somewhere. You've got a 5,000 CFM, cubic feet of air per minute fan, pressurizing the house, and then it's going to move through the whole assembly. So once it moves up into the attic, it can't get out. And so what it can do very readily is move through the openings, the leaky points in the attic where your hot air is normally getting out, but now that asbestos can get back through potentially, and or through wall assemblies and electrical outlets and everything else. So we want to just yield to the side of caution. If we're promoting health and safety, don't introduce a known toxin inside the house. Now, there are some homes. I talked to a lady just the other day. Her house was about 50 years old. It was a ranch. It had ventilation on the soffits, ventilation in the attic. And so she said, would you do a pressurization test there? I said, well, I'd be more akin to do that for safety, but let me still talk to Efficiency Vermont. Now, Efficiency Vermont has said that for your rebate monies to kick in, you can assume if you're going to be doing comprehensive work, which includes the remediation of the asbestos from the attic, you know you're going to make improvements once you do the air sealing and insulation. So you can assume without getting the baseline number of the blower door, you can assume you're going to get at least a 10% air leakage reduction and probably more. But that allows you to trigger the allowance for the rebates. Right. And so you're still going to be covered there. So yield to the side of safety first and foremost.
Yep. And when we're talking about vermiculite, when you're buying a house, if your inspector puts in the report there's vermiculite in this house, make sure that you negotiate a decrease in the purchase price of the house to include remediation. You don't want to be living in a house with vermiculite. It's a bad idea, and removing it can be very
tens
expensive.
Of thousands of dollars sometimes.
Yeah. Certainly. There is a company, Zonalite, which was one of the companies that distributed vermiculite, and they have a fund that helps clean them up to $4,200 or 50% of the cost, which it's always more than $4,200.
No, sure.
So if you have a situation where your house has vermiculite, there are subsidy monies and other monies to help you deal with that, but it is expensive. So make sure that you, if you're buying a house that has vermiculite, make sure that you get that discount in the purchase price, that you can get that professionally remediated. This is not something you're allowed to do on your own. And if you have a house with vermiculite and you sell it, you have to disclose
it.
That.
Yeah, definitely.
You're breaking the law if you don't disclose that.
Yep. And so, you know, as we're doing this initial walkthrough, we're also using the simple things that we're given. The back of our wrist to notice, you know, once the blower door is running, we can tell where leaks are coming from. But we also use our nose, because you can tell if there's stale air. Sometimes you can smell just if an appliance isn't burning appropriately. You also are going to find the smell of mold or mildew. And in fact, once again, where we were today, as soon as I got into an area where you saw the mold, it was the fragrance, the odor was quite prolific. Which is spores.
When you're smelling mold, you're smelling spores.
Exactly. So you're not just getting the scent of it, you're getting the effect of it's actually in your nose. So that means it's constantly there with the building occupants. So that's something to consider. With that, we're also going to make sure that you have working CO/smoke detectors.
Yep.
And this is, once again, time change weekend. And so you're going to set your clocks backwards.
Fall backwards.
And you're going to set it back 1 hour. And then, but also at the same time, you want to make sure your batteries have been changed in your CO and smoke detectors, and that they're functional. And if they're a yellow color, that's not retro.
What Jim means by that, if the plastic that makes up that the extrusion that is the body of the smoke detector or the carbon dioxide detector, if that isn't a white color, if it's turned that kind of greenish tan, that means it's too old and you should get rid of it. There's an interesting question. We're about to hit a break, but there's an interesting question from one of our listeners who wrote in and said, you were talking about carbon dioxide monitors, and I read something that says that sometimes, so you shouldn't have a carbon monoxide monitor that's more than 10 years old. And her question was, how long has it been sitting in the store before you buy it? It can be sitting in the store for a year or two. I like the color test, because the color test is kind of infallible, right? If you buy this brand new 2-year-old carbon dioxide monitor, and once again, we recommend getting the ones that have the digital readout, and it's a white color, it is not old enough not to use. You'll still get a good number of years of use out of it, and they're not expensive. A CO2 monitor is, you know, without the readout is $20. With the readout, maybe more like 40 or 50. But don't worry about how long it's been sitting on the shelf. The shelf life is long enough that you're going to get more than enough use out of that during the lifetime that's still left in it to be worth having that unit in place. There is no a sell-by number for carbon dioxide monitors or carbon monoxide monitors. But just keep in mind, if you're buying it from a reputable place, it probably hasn't been on the shelf for more than a year or so, and that's not going to cut so significantly into the usability of it to make it not worth buying. Today we're talking about a home energy assessment that I unabashedly call an energy audit. One of the reasons we don't like using the word audit is because there are negative connotations. The only other time we have an audit is when someone's auditing our taxes. So in general, people flinch from the concept of an audit. And it's true, we are going to give you some bad news, most likely, but we try to pad
that. Well, you wouldn't call us there or somebody like us if everything was great.
So where are we at? We've done the walk around. We've done the before blower door test, look at the house. We've asked you what's going on. The next thing is that Jim and I split up. We always do this as a team. Jim goes and sets up the blower door test for the test, and I start measuring the house. So I'm measuring all of the rooms because in order to translate the output that we get or the diagnostic number we get from the blower door test, which is in cubic feet per minute at 50 pascals, we need to know what the volume of the house is in order to turn that into a metric that people can understand. And the metric we usually use is air changes per hour at 50 pascals. So I'm going through the house. I'm measuring all the rooms. I'm creating a model. And that model is just not usable for the determination based on the CFM of what the air leakage is and air changes per hour.
Yep.
But it also allows me later on to get areas for pricing the work or for figuring out exactly how much of an area needs to be worked on.
But it also indicates – it's a great instructional tool because the work that's being done – you know, granted, you have the initial audit or home performance assessment, and that's tangible for the client. What isn't tangible is going to be once this work is done behind the scenes, you're not looking at a new addition normally. You're not looking at a lot of other things that you can say, aha, I did that. But when you see with the 3D modeling, the different areas, whether it's different type of attics, basement areas, whatever, and we're explaining what was happening, we're educating that person on why they should do these measures, where the affected areas are, so they're not just kind of guessing and saying, where was this? I don't really understand. You're giving that understanding, that proper education, so when they're making that incision – or decision.
Maybe an incision.
Yeah, sometimes. You're making that decision to move forward with the work, that they have the confidence and the understanding that, yes, this is the right thing to be doing.
Today was a great example. Here's a house that if you were to look at it from the outside, you think it's just a rectangular extrusion,
sure,
or just a box. And it ends up that the top floor is 2.5 feet shorter than the bottom floor. And mm-hmm. One of the things we've talked about a number of times during the show is a change in geometry is a place where people usually didn't do a good job air sealing. It's an opportunity where when they were building it, they're massing lumber because you need extra pieces of lumber to change geometry. And you can really – walking through the house, this particular house had a garage that had been an unconditioned garage that had rooms built into it that are conditioned. So the look of the model that I built was kind of weird.
Sure.
You have one part of the ceiling that was of the mudroom, that's an unconditioned mudroom, is the floor of the master bedroom upstairs. And we were able to show that the floor upstairs was colder with the infrared camera. And the modeling will say, okay, do you understand that ceiling, and I even said it when we were doing the walk around because
sure,
I'm already trying to figure out the geometry in my head, is that this is a what we call a suspended ceiling. This is an area over an unconditioned space. And those are often a place where you have comfort issues, if not durability issues.
Yeah, and you know, as Chris mentioned, you know, as he's doing these measurements, I'm setting up the blower door because the blower door is the diagnostics tool that you put in usually the main entry door of the house. It's this large fan with a computer, a manometer is what it's called, a measuring device that's attached to it that you then start blowing air out of the house to depressurize it to a point where you get a measurement, a pressure differential of negative 50 pascals, which basically means this. You're simulating what happens to the house when a 22.5 mile an hour wind brushes against or pushes against the house.
Right.
Because on one side, as it's pushing against the house, it pressurizes. As it's leaving the house, on the other side, it depressurizes. So you see it under those conditions, how leaky the house is then. Because once that depressurization set up, you're going to see how many cubic feet of air per minute are leaking out of the house at a given time. And then you use that coupled with the square footage to see how many air changes per hour are occurring. Now,
The volume.
And so with that, square footage and volume, correct. With that, what we have seen, well, the most recent passive house standards are saying that you should have a 0.6 air changes per hour or less. Current Vermont code allows for up to 3 air changes per hour. The leakiest one we've been in, I want to say, was 36, was it?
It was above 30.
Yeah, it was definitely above 30.
It was basically an open shed at that point.
Yeah, it's like you might as well have a constant three-season porch and try to live in it and heat it.
Right.
And, you know, so it's not very effective. So it's a great tool there. But it's also a very helpful tool to assist in the infrared camera review.
Right.
And using the infrared camera, it's a very intelligent diagnostics tool, which is going to be able to look for temperature differentials behind the scenes. Sometimes, in a sense, allowing you to see what's happening beyond the sheetrock or beyond the plaster.
It's almost an X-ray, especially if you're driving air that's significantly different in temperature than the air in the room. So the blower door test, it sucks air through gaps in what we call uncontrolled infiltration. Infiltration is uncontrolled air getting into your house. It's not that you have a window open. It's not that you have a door open. It's not anything you could purposely allow ventilation to happen. It is through the walls, it's through the gaps, it's through the unair sealed attic hatch, it's through the perimeter joist in the basement. That's what we're looking for. And if you add all of those little gaps up,
essentially have an open door usually.
You basically do. And today's, we were able to discern after doing the energy model and the blower door test that this house has about a 15-inch by 15-inch hole in the wall 24/7. So if you took all those gaps and added them up, you could have just an open hole in the side of your house that's 15 by 15.
And with that, the
inches, by the way, and not 15 yes. by 15 feet.
No, exactly. Yeah. And a new garage door. But with that, the infrared camera can also indicate where there could be moisture issues behind the scenes because it does pick up on evaporative cooling. I found anything from looking at a ceiling on the first floor, a leaking toilet on the second floor that was actually causing moisture issues on the ceiling. We also can find sometimes that there's moisture issues inside wall systems or along ceiling planes. And once we see that with the infrared camera, we then will use the moisture meter and help verify, like we tried to do today, whether or not that was really a wet area that needs to be addressed. And it looks like right now we're going to go to our phones because we have our first call, and it's Paul in Northfield. Paul, welcome to the show today.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I just turned on a couple minutes ago, and yes, I had my house done by the efficiency program that the state's running.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they come in and they went all through my house. The house is only 864 square feet living space.
Okay.
Basement, which is unfinished at the time and very leaky. It's a Huntington home, 20 years plus.
Sure.
They went through it. They looked at the attic over. You know, it had the normal 36, you know, R36 and the R19 in the walls.
Right.
And, they did the door blower, and they poked here and there and everything. They came up with a leakage of 1170.
Okay.
Leakage.
Yep.
Well, after they finished, they brought it down to 470.
Excellent.
They cut out 700 cubic feet an hour, and the house seems to be staying a steady 70 with the boiler turned off, with a couple windows, you know, on the south side of the house, keeping it warm.
That's great.
Great
what,
news.
What a great
testimony.
Result, yeah.
Yeah. And with that, Paul, was this one of the weatherization assistance programs throughout the state?
Yes. Yeah. They come out of Barry.
Yes, definitely.
Yep. That is weather
action or whatever.
Heat squad.
Heat squad. Definitely.
Yep. That's great news. And I want to encourage people engage in using these weather assistance programs. That's a great story, Paul. Thank you so much. Was there something else you wanted to ask?
They didn't charge me anything, but they do. They will take a donation, but you can't tip the guys or nothing. You can't even give them something, you know, for lunch or anything. They won't take nothing.
Sure.
And they put an additional 8 inches of insulation in my attic. the insulated, you know, the knee walls and everything, the sills in my basement.
Great.
Tightened up the, you know, all the cracks and all everything, the doors.
That's great.
And, well, I was totally amazed. And at night I make one fire in the wood stove in the basement, and that keeps the house at 70 all night.
That's wonderful news.
That's great news. Good testimony. Thank you. Thank you for reaching out, Paul, and sharing your story. We really appreciate it.
I just wanted to share it. You know, the programs are out there. You just have to, you know, take a little time and get into them.
Certainly.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
All right. You guys have a good day.
You too, sir.
Thanks.
You know, and after we do some of the infrared camera inspections as well, we also want to make sure that there are certain areas in the home that aren't communicating with one another. One of the big areas is first and foremost is the attic, because that's, as we've explained before, the stack effect happens, and that's where warm, buoyant air is pressing against the attic flat, and whether it's going to escape through wall systems, your smoke detectors, your lighting fixtures that are porous. You know, you want to make sure that's sealed.
Recessed lights.
Recessed lights, definitely. You want to make sure that's sealed appropriately and not communicating back and forth readily. But we also want to check that junction between an attached garage and the living space, because that can become a real big fire and safety issue. It can become just a carbon monoxide poisoning issue, and it can also just be a leaky spot where you get a lot of heat transferring into that space. And so we want to make sure those areas are sound and secure. So we'll do a zonal pressure diagnostics, and just to see if those areas are communicating and with one another with respect to air transfer, and if they are, how to properly address those things. We did already talk about combustion system analysis on what we're going to do, but we want to know how your different heating systems are operating. Are they operating efficiently, or are they producing too much carbon monoxide to where if you had a breach in the exhaust system or the ventilation system or the chimney, that it could cause a toxic event inside the house?
Or if you're going to do any work on the house and that house is going to be tighter, then your ability to vent an atmospherically vented appliance may decrease, and you may get backdrafting where you never had it before. And of course, just to describe it, backdrafting is where there's the combustion gases, which are supposed to be getting out of the house, come back into the house. So it's falling down the chimney and into the room, which can be deadly. I mean, carbon monoxide is probably the worst of the combustion gases. And as we've described before, carbon monoxide is more dangerous than carbon dioxide in and of itself, just because you can run outside and get fresh air when you have carbon dioxide poisoning. But carbon monoxide poisoning, you need a blood transfusion if you have that. So you could be outside gasping for air, but there's no way for that oxygen to get into blood cells because those blood cells are now clogged with carbon monoxide.
We're also going to be looking for gas leaks in the sense if you have a natural gas supply or propane supply on site for various appliances, whether it be a cook stove, whether it's going to be a hot water heater or your main heating appliance, we're going to be seeing if the infrastructure that gets the gas to the appliance is sound and secure. And it's not often, but every once in a while we'll find it with our expensive measuring tool, a gas leak. But then we're going to follow that up with a soap bubble test just to verify before we sound
low
the alarm.
Tech.
Yes, exactly. And because if you're calling a tech out there and they say, well, no, you're wrong, that's embarrassing and can be expensive. So we want to verify that there's a leak, and if there is, get it addressed. And never try to find that leak with a match, because if you do find it,
kaboom!
Different results.
Absolutely.
But Chris, what about the other things that we like to do as far as indoor air quality? We've mentioned that a lot, but this is going to dovetail into what we're going to be doing the next week or two with some of our clients. Why is that so important?
So indoor air quality is health. There's a one-to-one correlation between indoor air quality and health. If your indoor air quality is bad, and there are a lot of things in that sentence, what is bad indoor air quality? One of the main things that we talk about with indoor air quality is when you go to bed and you're in your bedroom and you close the door and it's the winter, so you don't – or the heating season, right, because we still have, you know, a month and a half of fall left and we're already closing our houses up. And you don't have – so you do have your windows closed and no fresh air coming in. What's going on with the carbon dioxide in that room? Are you topping the 1,200 parts per million that is recommended?
Sure.
We have monitoring going up into 4,000 parts per million, and that's just not something you want to be in on a regular basis. You also have the issues with fine particulates, what we call the microfines, the what we call PM2.5, which are pieces of dust that are so small that they can clog your lung alveoli, which is where the transfer happens in your lungs between air and your bloodstream. So we want to make sure that we're not clogging those. And if you have, I mean, I hate to say it, but you know that great smell of your fire burning?
Yeah.
Well, that's actually a microfine particulate that's bad for you.
Yeah.
So that's something we want to look for. We want to make sure also that not just the indoor air quality, but that we're looking at radon, right? Radon is one of those gases. It's odorless. It's invisible, and it can be higher in your house than your neighbor's house, even though you're on the same type of ground. It's completely random whether or not your house is going to suffer from radon. And radon is something that needs to be tested over a number of days. I think it was anything above 4 microcuries per liter is the standard. You can get a testing system for that, get that tested. If you have radon in your house, you need to install radon mitigation. There was a discussion early on about whether or not you could use a heat recovery ventilation system to refreshen the air enough to keep your radon down, and we found that that was not true. We need to have active radon mitigation. And any house that's being built new needs to have passive radon mitigations put in case after it's built, we notice that or monitor it and find that there's radon issues.
So after all this, and after we've checked humidity levels and looked at that and everything else, and we finalize the actual on-site assessment, we then follow up with the clients, go over the initial results, because a lot of times we, as human beings, we need to hear things multiple times before it sinks in, especially since we're giving so much information. It's very comprehensive.
It's like drinking out of a fire hose.
Exactly. Yep. So you have to reinforce that. We have that follow-up discussion, address any additional questions the client may have. And then at the end, within a couple of weeks, we provide a very comprehensive report that diagnoses, diagrams everything that we found, what the potential recommendations are, and a good cost structure of what they should expect to pay in a list of priorities on what should be addressed first. And then we also explain that there's going to need to be follow-up testing after any of the measures are performed.
If they're expecting to get the subsidies, yeah. It's also good to do them anyway, so
oh, sure.
You can see what the effect has been of the
measures. Yeah, is my money well spent?
Taken. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, when you do this, if we're coming up to the end of the show at this point in time, but should you wish to make changes to your house, whether it's a DIY project, whether you're looking to use somebody from Efficiency Vermont through the EEN network or Vermont Gas or one of the weatherization assistance programs, certainly give one of these organizations a call, even a DIY project, and get one of these people brought into the mix so that you can have a more comprehensive, effective, cohesive way of moving forward and making the changes. And then you can tap into some of the available funds. Like Paul said, you know, his whole project was paid for because of the weatherization assistance program.
Right.
And now he has a very comfortable and safe home.
And keep your eyes out of that propane. If you're heating with propane or natural gas, you're going to see a bigger bite coming out of your wallet this winter. So it's a perfect time to get engaged and have someone come out and take a look at your house and give you the basics you need to know about getting that fixed. I will say that people to do the work are probably out well into the spring at this point.
So, you know, definitely until next week, you know, this House Calls Vermont, but in the interim time, please email us with any questions that you have regarding some of the topics that we discussed today or
housecallsvt@gmail.com, or go to our YouTube channel and take a look at those. That's youtube.com/C/housecallsvermont. This is Chris West.
And I'm Jim Bradley.
Until next week.
We'll see you then.
House Calls Vermont has been brought to you by R.K. Miles, a third-generation family-owned business and proud to be your local buildings materials supplier. Find a location near you at rkmiles.com. By Folly Construction, for over 30 years known for anything construction. Big or small jobs, one call does it all. PollyConstruction.com. By Ken Libby of the Stowe Area Realty Group at Keller Williams Stowe, your trusted advisor, 802-793-2002. By Curtis Lumber with two locations in Vermont, Williston and Burlington. Request a quote for your next project online at curtislumber.com. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpainting.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems for all things basementy. NorthernNEFoundations.com. Be sure to join us next Saturday at 12:30 during the noon hour for House Calls Vermont.